Bauer 8-8. His last start was a win to get that record back to 500.
Swung on and missed.
Trout
got him looking.
That's a nice slider by Trevor Bauer.
Third ball, did he go? He did. Nick Lentz punches him out. The inning is over. Oh yeah, a late call. Curveball got him swinging. Another curveball and he struck him out with it.
Bradley Zimmer settles under it. Trevor Bauer gives him 8 great here today.
Oh, ball's crushed. Deep center. Trout looking up. It is gone. It just didn't clear the wall. And Carlos Santana gives the Indians a 1-0 lead with his 13th home run of the year.
Lindor with a base hit in the right field. Coming around third. Dyer will score and the Indians take the lead.
Did he go?
Yes.
He did. The Indians have swept the homestand. They are 10 games over 500, a season best 55-45, and they've won 7 in a row overall.
Having the confidence in me to get out of it is huge. Coming out of the game never crossed my mind. It was kind of one of those things where it's like, all right, well, I got one or two options. I either give up runs here and we'll probably lose, or I find some way to get out of it. You know, thankfully, it worked out. Kind of a unique situation today. Usually that's Andrew's spot or Brian Shaw's spot, and they both, I was able to get the next guys out, but it's obviously a dangerous situation.
We were staying away. They weren't going to pitch today, and Cody was going to be just one, not a four out. Boy, did he clutch up. He had to get himself out of a couple innings, but he competed like crazy. And I think the best thing of all was just the way he competed. He really got after it. I don't want somebody to ever give up runs if they're tired. I don't think that's fair to them. As you could tell, he was fine. He probably could have gone out for the ninth. And we probably won't stay with six forever, and I think that's pretty obvious. But I also think that if we run into a problem during the week, we'll manage their side days. We're not going to just banish somebody to the bullpen. We're just going to try to do what's in our best interest.
One of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen, it's things like this that make players and fans want to replace umpires with computers. Jerry Davis is a good guy. I like him as an umpire. He was always very fair to me. What is he doing? What kind of bad mood are you in a 22-10 game with a guy that's chasing 3,000 hits, one of the most respected players in all of baseball, and Adrian Beltre? Adrian's trying to have fun with you. He's trying to keep the game livable and watchable for you for the next inning and a half, and you throw him out? Are you kidding me? It was absolutely ridiculous.
Obviously, I would like him to be here. He is not, but I'm going to focus my energies on the guys that are. It's an unfortunate circumstance, one that we'll deal with, one that he'll deal with. I've had good, clean communication with him. I'll leave the nature of that conversation between us, but rest assured that he'll be ready to play football.
He believes that by the way he trains and keeps healthy 12 months a year, that he could show up and just go through a few practices, maybe one preseason game, and he would be ready to go. So all signs right now point to a mid to late August return. Anytime before then would probably be a surprise.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the final day of the extravaganza of this work week. It's a Friday. We like to call it free-for-all Friday right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Appreciate you being part of it. Yes. Big cheers from the studio audience. Glad you could be here. My apologies for you. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Give him a great big hand.
Oh, come on, guys. You're killing me, Smalls.
It's a free world. I can't make them applaud. what can I say? We do have Matt Lodi going to join us a little bit later in the program.
There they are.
They're liking that. But anyway, thanks for joining us right here. On the extravaganza. Got a lot of stuff to talk about today. You heard a little bit of the montage. The Indians have hit their stride. I think that's safe to say. But what the hell's wrong with the Royals, Cushlin? They won't go away. Royals won't go away. Tigers, of course, have done their part. They went away. And now, what are we down to? How many hours are we down to in the trading deadline? And I'm still waiting for Verlander's situation to work itself out, Wilson's situation to work itself out, possibly Kinsler's, possibly Avila's. Why are they still wearing the Old English D?
When it comes to Verlander, we kind of...
That's what it is, right? The Old English, right?
Yes.
The D, yeah.
Yes.
The script.
Yes. Even as an Indians fan, always loved the script D for the Old English script D for Detroit. It is one of the most classic. But
absolutely. So anyway, are we looking at everything coming down to late Sunday or even early morning?
Boy, it feels like that way, doesn't it?
On Monday?
It sure feels like that at this point. I mean, we know the situation on Verlander. If anything's holding up things on that front, it's how much money the Tigers are going to eat. We've been over that. But why a package hasn't been put together for Justin Wilson or some of the others that you mentioned just now, I don't know. I'm not sure. It feels like we're not going to have anything by the end of the day today. Of course, we'll keep our eyes and ears open as we go. Yeah, Bob, this, at least from a Tigers perspective, what they might do, it feels like it's going to go on through the weekend, maybe right up till the deadline, 4 p.m.
Knows?
On Monday, 73 hours. Well, less than 73 hours.
If you're a Tigers fan, maybe the hope here is that there's a little bit of a bidding war going on. Who knows? Maybe they're getting some offers for some multiple teams, and they're waiting to drag this out a little bit before they say done. They're waiting to see how many more times the phone rings and see if there's something else going on.
Well, that's entirely a possibility. We know people are calling the Tigers on all sorts of guys right now. We've pretty much gone over and over the rumors. This one just posted a little bit ago. Every time July hits, or really the All-Star break, from the All-Star break until basically the end of Monday, I am a frequent viewer of a wonderful site, MLB Trade Rumors. They just have something up just now. The Tigers are still looking for a possible match in Verlander. But I also wonder if the starting pitching market, it is also now coming into play here. You still have Sonny Gray out there.
Yeah.
A lot of people expect him to get moved. Now that they have finally failed, they got to a 500 like once or twice, but that horrid start has buried the Texas Rangers. So all I've read about in the last 2 days or so is that the Rangers are open for business regarding ACU Darvish, so maybe that's clouding things a little bit here.
They could do that, and he's younger, obviously.
Yeah, he's closer to a free agency more than Verlander,
right.
Of course. But Verlander, as we know, the thing that's hanging that up is money and who's going to eat what.
That's the weird part about the Verlander thing. The weird thing about it is usually when you have more years, it makes you more valuable.
Right.
You get a better trade package.
Exactly.
It's not a rental. You get them under control for another year. But when the money is what it is here, it's like it's just the opposite. Now you're committed to that money, even though you might not want him for that extended performance.
Precisely. We know that's been the main thing that's been hanging up. But now with it getting closer and closer to the deadline and other guys, at least relative to Verlander, your Sonny Grays, your Yu Darvishes are also possibly out there. That all may be hanging up. What's going on there? I still really expect Wilson and maybe Avila and Kinsler, not necessarily in the same trade, though they're reportedly trying to do some package deals. We brought up one of them the other day. Kinsler and Wilson is a package deal the Tigers would like to try to make happen that's out there. I've even seen in the last 24 hours or so the name Jose Iglesias, the shortstop, popping up, but I don't think anything's going to happen there. And you know why I don't think anything would happen on that type of front? Here's a name from back at the All-Star game. Everyone expect to be traded. I haven't heard one rumored word about this guy, the Red Zach Cozart. So if Zach Cozart's not getting traded as essentially the best shortstop that would be on the market, then Jose Iglesias probably isn't either. But just saying, that's a name I've heard come up in the last day or so as well. This all has all the feelings that it's going to roll through the weekend and on into Monday before some of these come down.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon, obviously. And a lot of times we'll see a flurry of things happen right before the deadline. But obviously we're just kind of waiting, and it's kind of one of those things where if you're a Tigers fan, you're bored right now. You're bored because the team isn't any good. The team is playing poorly. They're not giving you a whole lot of reasons to get excited. They've lost three in a row.
Two nights ago was the quintessential low point. You get crushed by the Royals team that you mentioned. Bruce Rondon is engaging in extracurriculars. And he gets thrown out. You have all the other things going on. There was a base running blunder that you get the impression they're not even paying attention in some twisted ways. And I haven't even begun to get to Miguel Cabrera's non-Miguel Cabrera numbers. And I was looking at some of that earlier. This is shaping up to be the worst season of his career. And he's never
which
really
started
had...
out as a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
Then he started to kind of swing the bat a little bit. And I want to say it was in mid to late May. It's like, okay, you know, it was what it was, but he's going to come back and start to put up regular numbers. But not so much. And like I said, for the Tigers, the fans, it's boring. It's boring right now because the team isn't any good. So what you look for, obviously, is, okay, how soon can we get better? And that's, you know, it's an uncomfortable position to be in. I can say that from many, many years of being in those shoes as an Indians fan. It's like, oh, my God, they're awful. This summer, not only is it dragging out, you know, these young kids aren't going to be ready until 2019 or 2020 or whatever. To make us, you know, potentially a contender again. So it's frustrating. And so here we now are now with 3 days left in the until the deadline on Monday. And it's like, geez, if you're going to make a move, let me know what I've got coming.
Yeah.
It's just because you want to get on with the rebuilding process.
And that's the last part right there, Bob, you know, is the key. And I kind of made some of these arguments a little bit yesterday, subbing for Mike Miller on Drive Time, where I'll be again today. And that's the thing. You have to still make some of these moves. Yeah, they're going to be, you know, painful from a fan's perspective, particularly a face of the franchise guy like Verlander. But you got to start fixing this. You got to start reducing the payroll and getting some actual prospects back into the system to essentially recalibrate the whole thing. These moves need to be made. What they're doing or not doing right now kind of sets up what they're going to have to do come the off season, and you need a good start to that. You need to get some of these replenishing young guys into the system and try to shave some payroll. Yeah, it's going to be painful for Tigers fans for a little bit, but these things have to be done for the overall future health of the organization.
That's exactly what it is. That's what it's all about, you know, for the future of the organization. And the future is what you just can't wait to get here when you're struggling and suffering through what you are now. But getting back to the original point of that commentary on baseball, as we heard that montage, the Indians have hit their stride. 7 straight wins. They sweep a homestand, back-to-back series. They are now 4 games over 500 at home, which they have been awful. They have been one of the worst teams in the American League in terms of home record.
That's what was so encouraging about that homestand that just ended.
Yeah, exactly right. And now they're 27-21 on the road. That record got damaged a little bit out on the West Coast when they went 1-5 against the 2 of the worst teams in baseball, the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants. But they came home and got healthy, and now they're they're off on a roll, and they are now a season high, as you heard in the montage, 10 games over 500. But why, at 55-45, are they still only with a 2-game lead in the division? What the hell has gotten into the Kansas City Royals? Who told them that they were allowed to be a part of this conversation?
Well,
they're not supposed to be here. Hell, they've won one more in a row than the Indians have. They've won 8 straight.
Yep.
Why are you here, Kansas City? Did nobody tell you? Did you not get the memo? The Indians are the defending Central Division champions. They're the defending American League champions. They have more talent top to bottom in their roster than you could even hope to. Why are you playing around here and messing with people's heads in late July?
Well, to a degree, this is partially where they should have been. I mean, in theory, that is still, at least for the remainder of this season before their guys hit free agency, that's still a decent team. Remember, you know, 14-15, they won back-to-back pennants and a title with this core, most of which is still there. And this was expected to be a last hurrah kind of year for them with that crew. Now, they started off slow, and that's why you're having the reaction, you know, that you're having right now.
They're supposed to be a 500 team.
But yeah, at the end of the day, they were supposed to be, to me, a slightly over 500. I mean, I remember back in preseason, spring training, I had them 3rd in this division behind the Indians and then the Tigers. Boy, do I look like a bonehead for part of those picks right there. But I had them third too,
and I think that's where they belong. It's just, I mean, honestly, it's that they should not be this, you know, what exactly are they? Hold on, where's the exact standings? They are at 53-47. Yeah, they should not be playing 530 baseball. They should be playing 500 baseball. The fact that the Twins are over their heads but have finally leveled off, have lost 4 in a row. I expected the Twins to eventually slow down, stop riding this little magical carpet of theirs and cruise to a stop eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's finally
somewhere
happened
in the neighborhood where the Tigers are. I thought the Royals would be in the middle of the pack of this division, not 2nd in this division, and not 2 games, you know, behind the Indians going into the season's final 2 months.
And to their credit, too, the Royals have seen what they've done in the last couple weeks and during this streak that they're on right now, and right smack in the middle of the streak back on Monday, if you recall. They made what I consider a very good trade from their point of view. You picked up Trevor Cahill, a starter. to go with their rotation. That's always been the Achilles heel of these decent Royals teams of the last couple of years. Remember, they had that young, great lineup, outstanding bullpen, and pray my starters get me through five innings, basically, right? So they added a starter in Trevor Cahill. This is a trade they made the other day with the Padres. Then they picked up Brandon Maurer. That's their closer out in San Diego, so they got a stud bullpen arm, you know, on top of that. So I'm still waiting to see how that all, you know, fits into what they're doing, because they just made that deal the other day. I don't even think Trevor Cahill's made a start for the Royals yet.
Well, as long as you're doing it and talking about them and giving them credit that I don't want them to have, and you're talking about their trades too, the big headline right now, as far as the Royals, is why the Royals should trade for the aforementioned Zach Cozart. This is again. It's on ESPN right now. Looking at an upgraded shortstop for them to try to catch and pass the Indians. They need another bat, and maybe indeed they will. I guess my question to that is, if the team that you're racing with and kind of you're not chasing them, you're leading. If you're the Indians, but the team that you are in competition with to win that division again for the second straight year is going to continue to add. You wonder if this doesn't make the Indians start thinking about adding as well. And you know, we know that there was at least some talk. You know, they were a part of a conversation for a moment or two about J.D. Martinez before the deal with Arizona. We know there's talk about them being interested in another starter to solidify the rotation in the middle.
I heard a rumor just early yesterday that they're going to try. I think they'll fail because of division rival and things. Mm-hmm. That they want to get into the Justin Wilson thing on the grounds of they lost Boone Logan, so Andrew Miller's the only lefty in the pen.
Yep, that would be interesting too. But, you know, a lot of that talk, other than what you just said because of the injury, had quieted down. You know, almost like, hey, we're good enough as is, and we're starting to play like it. You start to see that. And Chisenhall isn't back yet. And Kipnis isn't back yet. When you get those two bats back in the lineup, it's like adding star, you know, power already. So, you know, it looks like they might not do it. I'm just wondering, because the Royals are so active and made the deal that you talked about, and now they're talking at least about the Cozart situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of curious to see how that goes down.
Well, I will say this on the Cozart thing. He, like their current shortstop, Alcides Escobar, both of them are free agents at the end of the year. But quite frankly, in the last year or two, especially with the bat, Escobar has been awful, and Cozart would be a blatant upgrade even if he turns into just a two-month rental. So I can see why the Royals are thinking about that one.
Understood. And by the way, speaking of the Royals, just only because I have them in front of me, because we're looking at the standings right now in the division, this could be our stat of the day. It's not, but this could be our wild stat of the day. Eric Hosmer, not yesterday, but Wednesday, when he went 5-for-6 with 5 runs scored and 6 RBIs, including 4 in his first Grand Slam in that 16-2 rout of the Tigers.
Yeah.
He became the first player in Royals history, this would be your wild stat of the day, with at least 5 hits, 5 runs, and 5 RBIs in a single game.
That's pretty nuts.
That's an amazing stat, considering so many talented players, including George Brett, you know, that came out of Kansas City. So that's a wild stat in and of itself.
Yeah, good call on that one, and especially, you know, even though obviously in recent years until 2014-15, the Royals were kind of an joke team. Yeah, when you've had people like the George Bretts of the world come through to have a stat and a record like that with that team, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really is. So anyway, so there's just a little bit of baseball. We're still waiting for some big moves to be made. You know, new big moves to be made, I guess I should say.
And there have been some moves already made over the course of the leading up to this deadline, too. It's not like it's been quiet, and I'm liking that.
Well, I think it's been moderately quiet. I mean, what are the biggest
relative
moves
to the rumors
that have been made?
There was the Todd Frazier along with Daniel Robertson to the Yankees.
Yeah.
You had Quintana going to the Cubs. You had the Royals move that I just mentioned. It's a secondary
call that a big move, but I think JD is one of the biggest names to move.
And by the way, he hit a slam for Arizona yesterday.
Yeah, so that is now 5 home runs
right
in 6 games, I think.
It would be 4 homers in 6 games.
4 in 6 games that he has hit for Arizona. And Arizona, of course, continues to chase the Dodgers. It's a long chase. They're hoping to just find a way to a spot in the wild card. a game, and they have, by the way, let's see, among second place teams, yeah, they are. They are the would be the leading.
Unless something funky happens, the Diamondbacks and Rockies are sadly playing to see who gets home field in that wild card game, because they're not catching LA.
That's exactly where they are. I would not discount the Brewers yet, potentially, because they are 54-50 compared to the Rockies 58-45. So they're not that far apart. In other words, there could be a fight for that second wild card spot. They're really the only teams in it in terms of the current standings and their current records. There's the Braves are the second best team in the East, and they're nowheresville. They're 48-52. But between the Brewers, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies, odds are very, very long that it's going to be, or strong, I should say, it's going to be two of those three teams in the wild card.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that in the National League.
And J.D. Martinez being a part of it. I mean, you know, hey, that's a big boost, as we've just talked about. His power stroke is there, and that's exactly why you make big trades like that. Okay, so that's just a little bit of baseball stuff. We have a lot of other things we're going to get into today. We'll get back to baseball at about 4:10 when we actually talk about those red-hot Indians in a little more depth. Trevor Bauer going 8 innings, his season longest yesterday, getting some clutch performances again from some guys that maybe at the start of the season you didn't expect you would. So we'll talk about that with Matt Lodi. But there's a lot of other subjects to get into on a free-for-all Friday, things that we have discussed in light a little bit more lightly over the course of the week that deserve a little more attention, some things maybe you forgot about, including the CTE study and the resulting retirement of one player because of that. Latest on the Kyrie Irving trade rumors, and the Cavaliers reportedly have received offers from at least 6 teams with packages of players and or picks for Kyrie Irving. So we'll talk about that a little bit. What else do we have? Protests in the NFL. Now that we knew last year that the ratings were down, we were trying to figure out what it was all about. Turns out protests are the largest reason. That would take us to a Colin Kaepernick story that we'll have to talk about, because the Ravens became the latest team to think about Colin Kaepernick and then sign somebody who's not named Colin Kaepernick to play quarterback as a backup, at least in their camp. So that's another part of that story as well. So we got a lot of things to get into. It is a free-for-all. If you don't know what that means, it means get off your A, pick up the phone, and dial and talk about anything you want to. If you want to talk baseball, if you want to talk NFL, you want to talk NBA, you want to talk the fight, talking about the big one that's now less than a month away. Hell, if you want to talk about MMA and real fighting, the one that's coming up tomorrow night with Cormier and Jones, John Bones, Jones and Andy Cormier, that's going to be an outstanding fight. If you want to get into that a little bit too, we can do that. But we have pretty much wide open phone lines for you at 216-901-0945 between now and 4:10. But before we go to our bottom of the hour sports center, I believe it's time for the real wild stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
This is indeed a Wild Stat of the Day. And, you know, I was just quoting reading to you the line from Eric Hosmer, his wonderful day 2 nights ago against against the Tigers with his 5 hits, 5 runs, and 5 RBIs, setting a Royals record for us in an individual game. This is another rout. That one was 16-2. This one was the Washington Nationals beating up the Brewers 15-2. And here's how they did it. 5 home runs in the 3rd inning alone. 8 bombs in the game. By hitting 5 home runs in 1 inning, the Nationals became just the 2nd team to ever accomplish that feat. The other one, ironically, being the Brewers in a game in 2006. Also, as part of that 3rd inning barrage of home runs, it featured back-to-back-to-back-to-back jacks. Let me say that again so you can count the number of backs there. Back-to-back. First of all, back-to-back is always cool. Then back-to-back-to-back. It's like, oh, my God, 3 straight hitters homered. You very rarely see back-to-back-to-back-to-back jacks. But that's what the Nationals did with Wilmer Defoe, Bryce Harper, Ryan Zimmerman, and Daniel Murphy, which ties the Major League Baseball record for most consecutive home runs. By the way, who came up after Murphy? Whoever he is, punk. What a chump, what a loser. Why could you mean you couldn't break the record? You couldn't make it 5 in a row? Or did the dude after Murphy get drilled? That's what I want to know. I would love to know who the 5th hitter in a row was after the 4 home runs hit by Defoe, Harper, Zimmerman, and Murphy. But that is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. All right, stay where you are. We'll get to the bottom of the hour Sports Center. We'd love to get you on the phones as well at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Get you up and on the radio. It's a free-for-all Friday right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah. On and on and on and upward on this Friday afternoon edition of the extravaganza at 3:39. 866-240-1065. Let's clarify that phone number just in case you heard the wrong one. That's what happens, Christian, when you do 7 to 10 hours of radio a day some days. Honestly, it's crazy.
Because you have to keep all your notes there, and sometimes you forget to move one. I've done it, too.
Oh, my God, but your brain just gets scrambled between phone numbers and frequencies and stupidity. That's just, it's pretty much the latter is the most... It's the most obvious culprit, just flat-out stupidity. Anyway, dial us up at 866-240-1065. By the way, you know what? You can dial that up right now if you want, because I've got something cool for you. $100 gift certificate to Vapors Electronics Smoke Shop on Monroe Street. I got a gift certificate that's good through the end of next month, August 31st. So if you'd like that $100 gift certificate, be caller number 4 right now. Caller number 4 to 866-240-1065, and we will set you up with Vapors on Monroe. So there you go. Congrats to the soon-to-be winner. Okay, I told you I had a ton of these other things I wanted to get into today. And some of them are just silly and fun, and this is one of the silly and fun. Jim, have you ever wondered who gets to be OSU or who gets to be MSU? Is it Michigan State University or is it Mississippi State University? Or is it Montana State University? And I'm sure there's others that I can't name. Missouri State University. Who gets the right to be that? Well, Ohio State wants nobody else. Sorry, Oregon State. Too bad about your luck there, Oklahoma State. Ohio State, the Buckeyes, are trying to become the real OSU. They want to trademark OSU so that nobody else can use it. I don't know how you can possibly do that. That'd be like trademarking your name. Nobody else can use your name ever again. I don't understand that. Ohio State filed for an apparel rights trademark to OSU in February of this year. In the eyes of the U.S. government, they want the claim to being the real OSU. That's the issue here. Ohio State and Oklahoma State are the ones challenging here. But again, you've got other ones. Oregon State has to be in the mix here. There's no other states with O, right? Just Oklahoma, Ohio, and Oregon. I think that's probably it. Yeah, that's probably it, those three. But like I said, you can probably name a few MSUs. You could probably do the same thing with some UMs. I mean, doesn't Michigan is UM? I believe Miami, although they call themselves the U, University of Miami, down in Coral Gables. And then there's, of course, MU, which is Miami University of Ohio in the MAC. Missouri, does Missouri go by UM or do they go by MU?
Montana. I want to say MU, but I'm not sure. I'm not really fluent in Mizzou.
Yeah,
and
I'm not either.
And there's also
but you
that
understand
too.
The point. That
yes.
There's all of these schools. How do you want to get a trademark so nobody else can use the OSU? According to the Columbus Dispatch, Oklahoma State is filing a notice of opposition to the request after the Buckeyes made an effort to trademark OSU with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office earlier this year in February. The school...
The whole thing is still funny to me.
How do you tell the Cowboys of Oklahoma State, no, you can't be OSU anymore. We are the only OSU, and we get to put it on shirts. You don't. How do you tell the good folks up in Oregon about Oregon State that you can't be OSU anymore? The school has until the end of August to file its opposition with the federal government, though administrators from both schools hope to see an agreement that will benefit both schools. OSU doesn't belong exclusively to one school at the moment. The trademark has been shared through concurrent usage agreements with Oregon State. Look at that. I knew it. Included in those, the agreements take the federal trademark and award it on a state-by-state basis. And in the case of Iowa, a county-by-county basis, according to the Columbus Dispatch. Oklahoma State's trademark applies to 54 western counties, and Ohio State's applies to 45 eastern counties. Wow, that's trippy. This isn't a conflict of schools, said Ohio State spokesman Chris Davey. This is the type of item that arises from time to time in administering a trademark. The existing trademark agreement for OSU applies to sports events and recreation programs, entertainment, education. The current debate, where we assume new battle lines will be negotiated and drawn, concerns apparel. We are constantly evaluating and licensing landscape to protect Oklahoma State University's interests. said OSU's Gary Shutt. We look forward to talking to Ohio State about joint use and making sure our universities and our fans are best served. Have you ever seen an OSU in scarlet and gray, Jim, and thought to yourself, hey, the Oklahoma State Cowboys?
Never once have I had that, but now it makes me wonder what idiot has had that problem.
Have you ever seen an orange OSU and thought to yourself, hey, the Ohio State Buckeyes? Yeah, I mean, come on. Do we really need trademarks for this? Do we really need to go to, you know, make lawyers richer with this kind of nonsense by going to the government and stuff? And I have no idea what OSU's, Oregon State's OSU looks like, so I can't sit here and play the color game.
I know there's a maroon in there with the Beavers, but that's about it. They haven't been good enough for me to notice.
And I think the Oklahoma State OSU, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't it come with, like, the cowboy hat near it?
Something like that, yeah.
Oklahoma State Cowboys, and I don't think anybody's going to confuse that for the Buckeyes as well. So their OSU, hold on, let me see. No, they do have just a plain OSU one, too, a giant S in the middle, and then smaller O and U on either side of it. With the S kind of extending out.
But the orange in there should be a dead giveaway for you morons.
Just one of those goofy things. Okay. Congratulations. We did get our winner. Matt Long of Wasion won the Vapors Prize, the gift certificate. So congratulations. You have until the end of August to use that. This one is just a fun story for me, too, in the same way that the OSU one is, Jim. But I take a lot more pleasure in reading this one because I freaking love it. Every time an NFL team considers working somebody out for a backup or a third string, maybe even only training camp job for quarterback, and they pick somebody not named Colin Kaepernick, I get a little smile on my face. All right, it's a big wide grin, one ear to the other on my face, because good. This is exactly what I want to continue to see happen. But for reasons you may not even understand. Let me explain. First of all, you heard, what was it, 2 days ago, Jim? Was it on Wednesday that the Chargers brought in the now L.A. Chargers? It's going to be very hard to get used to that. But the L.A. Chargers brought in Robert Griffin III, RG3, for a little workout, see what he can do, see what he's got, because they're looking for
some depth. I did come across that in passing the other day.
Yep. And according to most reports, he looked pretty good. But the Chargers didn't sign him. The Chargers made a trade instead. Did you know who they traded for?
No.
Come on. Kush! They made a trade with the Buffalo Bills to bring former Orange OSU quarterback Cardale Jones to be their backup quarterback behind Phillip Rivers. Cardale Jones is now a Charger. Former Orange OSU.
Are we going to do that all season
No, not all season, just maybe for part of today. Tying those two stories together, former Ohio State quarterback Cardale Jones is now a backup for Phillip Rivers. And I love stories like that, too. Do you want to know why? Well, they brought in Robert Griffin, who happens to be African-American. Then they traded for Cardale Jones, who happens to be African-American. And the Chargers have thus insulated themselves from anybody saying that this is about the racial issue and Colin Kaepernick's racial protests and not wanting to be a part of the sideshow, if you will, that's going to be Colin Kaepernick if he's ever signed again. So many people say that this is a racial issue. The white owners are keeping black Colin Kaepernick out because of all of the distraction that his protests about race in America caused a year ago, all of that distraction. And I love when teams bring in other quarterbacks and sign other minority quarterbacks. Now, nobody can say this is about race or trying to blackball Colin Kaepernick. Well, that was 2 days ago. Today, it's even better. Yesterday's show, we told you about this. John Harbaugh, Ravens coach, said that he would not rule out signing Colin Kaepernick as a backup quarterback because of Joe Flacco's health and just, you know, trying to put a little depth at that position. Obviously, he's got a back injury. Flacco's recovering from a back injury. Everybody knows that. And so he told the media that he has a regular conversation with Colin Kaepernick and absolutely would consider bringing him in if they do need to sign a quarterback. And it looked like, okay, maybe this league-wide, perceived, according to some, blackballing of Colin Kaepernick is going to be over because here comes John Harbaugh to the rescue. Well, they signed a quarterback in Baltimore today, and it wasn't Colin Kaepernick. The best part about of the story is who it was. Because you know who it was? It was David Olson. Yeah, that David Olson. David Olson, you know, quarterback for the Kansas City Phantoms of the Champions Indoor League. An indoor football league, but not the indoor football league, which is already about five levels below the National Football League, the regular indoor football league. What's that one called, Jim? What's the main indoor football league called? The one that the Cleveland has the Gladiators and
Orlando has the Predators. Oh, the arena. That's just Arena Football League. I think that's just AFL, Arena Football League.
Okay. This is the Champions Indoor Football League. It's CIFL, apparently. David Olson of the Kansas City Phantoms now has a job, at least for camp. You know, a lot of times these third-string guys will get cut by the end of camp. Depends on what teams do. Very few of them want to keep three quarterbacks now, but practice squad guy, maybe. Who knows? But if for the moment, David Olson, that David Olson, is a member of the Baltimore Ravens, and Colin Kaepernick is not. The Kansas City Phantoms of the Champions Indoor League, Football League, Olson played at Stanford for John's brother, Jim, so maybe that's why he knows a little bit about him. Jim Harbaugh gave David Olson a positive review to his brother, John Harbaugh, according to NFL.com's Ian Rappaport. Olson then transferred from Stanford to Clemson, where he threw a grand total of three passes during his 2014 season. So he goes from Stanford and Jim Harbaugh to Clemson, throws three passes there, finds his way to the Champions Indoor Football League, plays for the Phantoms. And I'm looking for some stats. I'm praying to God. I'm begging for some stats for David Olson in the Champions League. And I don't have any. This is, Jimmy, you want to hear how obscure David Olson is? Every sports story that you read online, or almost everyone, you know, if you're using even close to a reputable online sports service, every player or coach or team is in blue because there's a hyperlink. It's linked to that person's bio page or its stat page or whatever. Like, I'm staring at it right now, and I'm reading you, quote, hours after Ravens coach, and Ravens is hyperlinked.
Right.
So that you can click on the Ravens page. John Harbaugh told reporters that he wouldn't rule out signing Colin Kaepernick, which is hyperlinked. You can go to his page. Baltimore signed quarterback David Olson, whose name is not hyperlinked, because there's no page to go to
to learn anything about
David Olson.
The only thing I found on David Olson was not a stat. He also played in for the Iowa Barnstormers, and that's only significant
because Kurt Warner's old team, isn't it?
You beat me to it. That's who Kurt Warner once played for. but stats, no, can't find him.
None, and even better, Kansas City Phantoms isn't hyperlinked, and neither is Champions Indoor League. Now, Jim, today, everybody who lives and breathes has their own website. But the Champions League doesn't have a website in the age of 2017? Seriously.
How can you run any kind of sports business at all without even the most basic of websites? Seriously, good call.
I'm just looking. I mean, you can get one for like $1.99. What's it called? What's it called when you want to register your name? Domain. $1.99 domain from like, you know, what's the thing that, what's the website selling thing that the race car driver?
Oh, geez.
Why am I having such a hard time? I can't remember her name now. I'm so into this story. I can't remember her name now.
You're thinking of GoDaddy.com.
GoDaddy, yeah. Who's the driver?
Danica Patrick.
Danica. I kept wanting to say Dana. And I'm like, that's not Dana. It's Dana White. It's USC. Danica Patrick does the commercials on every Super Bowl for GoDaddy. You can get a website like domain name for like $1.99, and you're telling me they can't even do it. All right, actually, they do have one. It just wasn't big enough for CBS Sports to find. CBS Sports cannot hyperlink or did not hyperlink the Champions Indoor Football League or the Kansas City Phantoms. That's how obscure this reference is to David Olson, but I did find it. It is at COCIF. No, G-O-C-I-F, G-O-C-I-F.net. That's Champions Indoor Football. And as I click on it, It may very well have been put together by somebody you just grabbed a GoDaddy. No, I'm teasing. It doesn't look that bad as I look at it. It contains...
Although, if these links will work, maybe I can find some David Olson stats.
Well, I will say this. There is the lead story under League News at gocif.net is NFL's Ravens signed Kansas City Phantoms QB David Olson. Let's see if he is hyperlinked on his own league's website. The Ravens have added a quarterback. No, it's not Colin Kaepernick. According to multiple reports, it's former Stanford and quarterback
we're
David Olson,
somewhere.
Who is not hyperlinked.
Well, wait, I got some. In four games played, 395 passing yards, 9 touchdowns, 50% completions.
Wait. Whoa. Slow down. Give me those stats again. How many games played?
According to this, he played in four.
Is this the league website?
This is the league website for 2017 because, they play him in the spring. So this was April and into May. He played in four games.
How many yards?
395.
Stop. This is an indoor football league. Indoor football. Below the Arena Football League, which is the Arena Football League. And in the Arena Football League, this guy couldn't cut it. So he's down in the Champions Indoor Football League, which is a step below that. And he's averaging less than 100 yards passing per game. Four games. 395 yards.
Oh, I'll even do
that. Please continue. Give me the next stat.
The next stat, he has 9 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
9 touchdowns in 4 games.
His completion percentage is 54.3.
Stop.
I'm not done yet, though.
Seriously, wait a second. In the Arena League, games are usually 77 to 74. In the Arena League, teams put up, quarterbacks have 8 touchdowns in a game. This is all offense, Arena League football. And you're telling me that in the Champions Indoor Football League, the guy that was just signed by the Baltimore Ravens has 395 yards, completes only half of his passes, has 9 touchdowns and 4 interceptions in 4 games.
That's what I'm telling you. And, but wait, there's more. If I'm reading these correct...
You can't be.
He's not even the main starter.
That was going to be my next question. He's only got 395 yards, I'm going to assume he's a backup.
Yep.
On the Kansas City, what are they called?
Kansas City Phantoms.
He's a backup quarterback for the Kansas City Phantoms in the Champions Indoor Football League.
And if
holy good crime.
A guy named Frank Sewer, if I'm reading these right, it would be the starter. He played in 9 games, 660 passing yards, 13 touchdowns, 6 picks. That seems to be the starter.
He's the starter. It looks like maybe they split time because he's only got 660 yards in those 9 games and 13 touchdowns. Holy crap. No, I want people to understand this. Please listen. I'm looking at the passing leaders for this strange little league. And guys like somebody, Dee Portieri, for the Duke City Gladiators, in his 13 games, he has thrown for 3,000 yards, completed 60% of his passes, and 63 touchdowns.
Okay.
Against 16 interceptions. N. Davis for the Amarillo Venom has thrown for 2,900 yards, also 60% of his passes, 62 touchdowns. R. Johnson for Dodge City Law, 66% completion, 2,500 yards, 42 touchdowns. And somebody named Dixon for the Texas Revolution, holy crap, 67 touchdowns in just 15 games for the Texas Revolution. None of those guys got signed. Instead, the dude got signed is David Olson, who seems to be the backup or at the most a co-starter, a shared split time guy.
Actually, it looks like Kansas City is employing the Brown style. I'm seeing a third quarterback who played in 5 games for Kansas City.
He's one of 3 quarterbacks to share time.
That's like our Browns, Bob. All those multiple quarterbacks per season.
This is killing me. This is killing me.
This is wonderful stuff.
What's the dude's name? Sewer? Sewer?
Frank Sewer is the one. Then you got Olsen. And this third guy who I just found, Derek Bernard.
What kind of numbers does he have? How many touchdowns?
This can't be right.
So Frank
not
Sewer
right
has 13 touchdowns in 9 games played for them. 660 yards. How in 9 games do you only have 660 yards?
I have
Not even averaging a yard a game. Or 100 yards a game.
Not really sure how that's even possible.
Okay, and then 13 touchdowns, 6 picks. That's Sewer. And we have our boy Olsen, who has, what did you say, 4 touchdowns?
9 touchdowns, 4 picks.
9 touchdowns and 4 picks.
395 passing yards. And this third guy, Bernard, who I find on this website.
Yeah.
In 5 games, 476 yards, 11 touchdowns, 7 picks. So Kansas City Phantoms clearly have quarterback problems.
So they got 13 from one guy, 11 from the other guy, and 9 from our boy Olsen,
yep,
who's going to the
Ravens.
So 13 and 11 is what, 24, and what did I say, 9, so 30. They got 33 touchdowns from their quarterback position. And one of those three guys has been signed to an NFL roster going into training camp ahead of Colin Kaepernick.
I'm just going to laugh on the football level. I don't even need the Kaepernick sideshow. I'm just going to laugh on a football level. They're going with Olsen, possibly the second or third stringer from the secondary indoor football league, instead of a guy who's quarterbacked in a Super Bowl.
Oh, that is so
priceless. I don't
even
need to go to the Kaepernick sideshow. He was at least quarterbacking in a Super Bowl, and they're going with this guy instead of him. I don't even need the sideshow part. That in and of itself is hysterical.
Well, this is priceless. Now, you may wonder, why? Why are you so happy about this? Why don't you want Kaepernick to have a job? Are you joining collusion? Is there collusion among the 32 NFL owners to keep this guy blackballed from the league because he dared to defame the national anthem, because he dared to defame the flag, because he dared to defame police and the military? Is that why you're doing this? And the answer is no. Do I hate those things about him? Yeah. Am I disgusted by the lack of facts and honesty that he presented with his ridiculous little press conferences after some of the first games, talking about crime in the United States and this and that and the other? Yeah, I'm disgusted by that. Would I want him on my team? No, I wouldn't. But the reason I take such joy in this, and the reason that all of his defenders, all of his supporters, can go pound salt someplace, is because they're acting as though he was cut for his transgressions. They're acting as though he was cut by the 49ers, and he was sent packing from the league because of all of these things. And the rest of the league said, yeah, we're with you, San Francisco. We don't want this guy. We'll all agree not to take him. Whether it was an actual wink and a nod collusionary effort between the owners, or there didn't need to be a wink and a nod, because they just all kind of knew what the others were feeling, and we'll do this thing. The fact of the matter is, Colin Kaepernick is unemployed today because of Colin Kaepernick. He opted out of his contract with the San Francisco 49ers, and in fact took a big hit in order to get to free agency earlier, because he felt like he could get into a better position with more money, with a better team. He didn't like quarterbacking a team that was 11-24 in his last 25 starts, where he was completing just over 50% of his passes, and he wasn't the man that he was playing for Jim Harbaugh, the new Michigan coach, when he was going to the back-to-back AFC or NFC title games and a Super Bowl. He didn't like that. He opted out and made himself unemployed, thinking, I can make more and be in a better position elsewhere. And now he's finding out he can't. If he had just stayed put, done his job, he'd probably be the starter in San Francisco this year. Because what do they have over there? Who do they have over there? Brian Hoyer? And who knows? Maybe a Brian Olsen. Maybe they'll go to one of the other three guys from the Phantoms of the Champions Indoor League to find themselves another quarterback. Cap brought this on himself. I feel no sympathy for him whatsoever. Good luck in your next career. Maybe you could find your way into politics or social activism or something like that, because you know what? The bottom line is, you overvalued yourself. You gave up your contract, and you thought that you were better than you are. You're not. You can't play this position anymore. The league knows it. It's not a conspiracy. It is just you. You get what you deserve. You made this bed, Colin Kaepernick. Now lie in it. God, I love that story. Back with hour number two of the extravaganza right after the top of the hour Sports Center here on ESPN 106.5. Jan Ticket.
Obviously, I would like him to be here. He is not, but I'm going to focus my energies on the guys that are. It's an unfortunate circumstance, one that we'll deal with, one that he'll deal with. I've had good, clean communication with him. I'll leave the nature of that conversation between us, but rest assured that he'll be ready to play football.
He believes that by the way he trains and keeps healthy 12 months a year, that he could show up and just go through a few practices, maybe one preseason game, and he would be ready to go. So all signs right now point to a mid to late August return. Anytime before then would probably be a surprise.
One of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen, it's things like this that make players and fans want to replace umpires with computers. Jerry Davis is a good guy. I like him as an umpire. He was always very fair to me. What is he doing? What kind of bad mood are you in a 22-10 game with a guy that's chasing 3,000 hits, one of the most respected players in all of baseball, and Adrian Beltre? Adrian's trying to have fun with you. He's trying to keep the game livable and watchable for you for the next inning and a half, and you throw him out? Are you kidding me? It was absolutely ridiculous.
Bauer 8-8. His last start was a win to get that record back to 500.
Swung on and missed. Trout. Bang. Got him looking. That was a nice slider by Trevor Bauer.
Third ball, did he go? He did. Nick Lentz punches him out. The inning is over.
Oh, yeah. A late call. Curve ball got him swinging. Another curve ball, and he struck him out with it.
Bradley Zimmer settles under it. And Trevor Bauer gives him 8 great here today.
Ball's crushed, deep center. Trout looking up, and it's gone! It just did clear the wall, and Carlos Santana gives the Indians a 1-0 lead with his 13th home run of the year.
Lindor with a base hit into right field. Coming around third, Dyer will score, and the Indians take the lead.
Did he go?
Yes.
He did! The Indians have swept the homestand. They are 10 games over 500, a season best 55-45. They've won 7 in a row overall.
Having the confidence in me to get out of it is huge. Coming out of the game never crossed my mind. It was kind of one of those things where it's like, all right, well, I got one of two options. I either give up runs here and we'll probably lose, or I find some way to get out of it. And thankfully, it worked out. Kind of a unique situation today. Usually that's Andrew's spot or Brian Shaw's spot, and they both, I was able to get the next guys out. But it's obviously a dangerous situation.
We were staying away. They weren't going to pitch today. And Cody was going to be just one, not a four out. Boy, did he clutch up. He had to get himself out of a couple innings, but he competed like crazy. And I think the best thing of all was just the way he competed. He really got after it. I don't want somebody to ever give up runs if they're tired. I don't think that's fair to them. As you could tell, he was fine. He probably could have gone out for the ninth. And we probably won't stay with six forever. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. But I also think that if we run into a problem during the week, we'll manage their side days. We're not going to just banish somebody to the bullpen. We're just going to try to do what's in our best interest.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the extravaganza rolls on right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim, I'm having way too much with that story. I just tweeted it, and I want everybody to understand it. I want you to really, really understand the depth of this signing. Here's what I tweeted, and it took me exactly 140 characters.
Nice.
Ravens sign QB, period. From indoor league, period. Not the AFL, period. A worse indoor league, period. Who's not even a starter, period. Instead of hashtag Colin Kaepernick, period. Bwah, ha, 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 exclamation point. That is the best use of 140 characters I've done in a long time. Well done, John Harbaugh, especially after getting everybody's antenna up that, hey, Colin Kaepernick might finally have a job. Joe Flacco's hurt, and John Harbaugh is interested. That is until David Olsen became available, one of three non-starting quarterbacks for the Kansas City Phantoms of the Champions Indoor League, who is now under contract while Colin Kaepernick is not. And yes, I can freaking dig that. Hey, Colin.
That's how winning is done.
By David Olsen, that is.
I don't know about y'all, but this, I don't know about you.
That's not where I wanted to go with that. I was hoping for Ric Flair there. Let me hit him one more time. That's what I'm talking about. All right. You know who else is wooing their way? You know what else was really cool? Total free-for-all Friday story before I go to Matt Lodi. Total free-for-all Friday story, Kush. Do you ever watch the long drive competitions, you know, like Happy Gilmore, was, you know.
Every once in a while I catch one of them, sure.
You know how, what's his name, Shooter told him.
Shooter McGavin.
It's real. That is a real thing, obviously. I was watching highlights on SportsCenter of it on, I want to say, Tuesday or something like that.
Okay.
Dude who won it drove the ball 500 and...
It doesn't matter. You're already at 500-something yards. That's insane.
Whatever the hell it was. And he was hilarious. Just a hilarious dude. I mean, just a showman. After he won the championship with his championship-winning drive, he was doing a little interview, and he went full Ric Flair. I mean, Rolex wearing, jet flying. It was hilarious, and he ended it off with a woo! Before stomping away. It was my favorite thing ever. I have been using Ric Flair on the radio for 20 years. I mean, I punctuate every great story that I have with Ric Flair, either with Ric Flair or Cyrus from the Warriors,
can
who does this.
You dig it?
It's just what I've been doing it for 20 years, and I just loved that a dude actually went all Nature Boy, especially in such a fun event. You should have seen the dude, too.
That's good stuff.
It really was. Just a total free-for-all Friday story. If I can find the audio during one of our next breaks, I will play it of that guy's post-competition interview. It was hysterical. Great stuff. All right, now back to somewhat normalized sporting adventures. The Cleveland Indians, as mentioned, are finally hitting their stride after their worst road trip of the season. A trip that saw them go 1-5 in Oakland against the dreadful A's, and then in San Francisco against the more dreadful Giants. Just really looks like maybe they are not made for prime time this year. This World Series hangover malaise is going to continue even into the late summer, and it might very well be a short postseason if they were to make it at all. Just when you see all of that, they win 7 in a row, sweeping a homestand, and now look like they are indeed hitting that stride and are perhaps poised in the month of August to put some distance between themselves and the Royals. They have already put some distance, 6 games between themselves and the Minnesota Twins. And joining us now to talk about the American League Central and all things baseball is our friend out of Cleveland, Mr. Matt Lodi from Northeast Ohio Sports Insiders, NEOSportsInsiders.com if you're looking for it online. Mr. Lodi, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Good Friday, Lodi. Bob. How are you?
There he is. Now I got you. Good, man. Real good. It's a Friday. Weekend is here. We all need it. I'm so drained after a long week. I got to tell you, so I'm just excited the weekend is here. I'm so excited to finally see the guys with the Wahoo on their cap playing baseball the way the defending American League champions know they can.
Yeah, to say this was needed is an understatement. And I think, Bob, the thing that surprised a lot of people, well, there's two things. Number one is how fast the starting pitching kind of righted itself. And I know that everybody's really pointing to what Danny Salazar did on Saturday. I'm excited to see what he can do tonight. I think that's one start. Okay, I'll give you that. Let's see what he does second time around because, players and teams are going to start to see him again and start to see tape on him again. But the other thing, too, that has been so lacking, I think, the whole season, and we've discussed it more than once, is the runners in scoring position is just the fact that this team finally hit the ball well in clutch situations. You know, obviously they had some big numbers against the Angels, 2 games in which they scored 7 runs in 1 inning. Mm-hmm. And we'll see now if they go on the road if they can continue that. I mean, they're going to get some players back. Chip Chisenhall is going to come back here shortly. Kip is on a rehab. He's going to be back maybe for the Boston series. So, it is kind of coming together. And, as they get ready to go into August is not going to be easy because they've got some tough teams. They play a lot of teams in the American League East. They got 2 games against Colorado, and we know how bad they've done against the interleague this year. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can kind of keep this momentum up. Certainly, this is the type of win streak, though, this team really, really needed. And as you mentioned in your monologue there to kind of create some distance. They can't seem to shake Kansas City, but I think they finally sort of put to bed the Minnesota Twins, who've been a great story all year, but certainly I think we all know that the Indians outclassed them in terms of talent this year at least, and they've kind of put some distance between those two teams.
You know, I felt the same way about the Royals, that the Indians kind of outclassed them, and they ought to be putting some distance there as well. But the Royals are not only hanging on, they have won 8 in a row, which is one more than the Indians have. And they're adding pieces. You know, we know they added an arm. Jim McCushion and I were talking about that before. There's rumors they're considering a deal possibly for Zach Cozart now to add some pop as well in one of the best shortstops, certainly the best shortstop available, I guess I would imagine, from the Reds. They're not ready to concede anything. Do you see them hanging in and making things a little nervous in the months of August and September?
Well, those two teams play each other an awful lot. So I think if you know, that's going to be the telltale sign. I mean, there's not going to be a situation here where it's going to come down to how they play against other teams. I mean, obviously it will. There's, you know, another, we're at 62, 63 games left per se, but they've also got to play each other a lot. So if the Royals want to put an exclamation point in making this a race and the Indians want to do just the opposite and make it not a race, it's going to come down to those, I believe, 10 games they have against each other here in the months of September and, of course, August. And, you know, talking to Tom Hamilton about the Royals the other day, you know, the Royals are in a situation, I believe it's in this offseason, they've got 4 or 5 free agents. This is it for them. This is the end of kind of their run. I think if you look back to the two World Series that they played in, winning one, losing one, this really is probably their window of opportunity. If they're going to make one more big run, it's going to be this year, because you know how it is with mid-market teams, Bob. They're not going to be able to re-sign all those guys. We've seen some of those guys already go to other teams throughout the last two seasons. So if the Royals really want to do this, if they really want to make this thing interesting, they're going to have to get a piece or two, which it looks like they're going to be willing to do. And their farm system, by the way, is another issue, because they've spent so much trying to get other players the last couple of years. They don't have a ton of pieces and parts to be able to move assets around. So this really, to me, Bob, is their last opportunity to win this division. And the Indians are going to have to do what they can to make sure it doesn't happen. I know Kansas City, like the Indians, have played awfully well, as you mentioned here, in the last, week and a half, 2 weeks. But, you know, the 10 games the two teams have against each other, it's really going to be a big, big deal in the American League Central. And it's really going to define the division, I think, the rest of the way.
Matt Lodi joining us from IndioSportsInsiders.com. He covers the Indians and other Cleveland sports out there. We're talking about the American League Central and whether or not the Indians are going to be able to put some distance between themselves and the Royals, the only team really left standing right now. The Twins have fallen back. They've lost 4 in a row. They're 6 back. The Tigers, of course, are trading pieces. They are 10 back. So it really is Indians and Royals. Now, you mentioned the Royals maybe having to add a piece or two. What about the Indians? Jim Cushlin was telling me a few moments ago, Matt Lodi, that with the injury to Boone Logan, they leave Andrew Miller really as the only lefty in the pen, and they were talking about maybe sort of kind of adding a left-handed reliever, maybe in the form of one Justin Wilson from the Tigers. And it's not often you see trades within a division like
that.
And he kind of is expected to be the guy who might bring the most in trade value back to the Tigers as they try to restock their own system. Do you hear anything that the Jim is hearing there? Is that something the Indians would be and might be interested in?
Yeah, we actually had that too, that they're looking at him, and that's a guy that, you know, like you said, can really be an asset in that pen with, you know, the Andrew Miller being the only other big lefty in the pen. You know, Logan was a guy who didn't have a great season, but was doing his job. And I think that when you lose a piece like that, and certainly the Indians are not expecting him to come back at all this year, I think that they're going to have to figure out a way to do something. You know, a lot of people have debated whether they should go after a utility guy, whether they should go after a bullpen arm, whether they should really make the push to go after a starter, the likes of a Sonny Gray. I still think utility and bullpen arm, and I'm not saying it's even in that order. It might be just the opposite, but those are the two pieces that this team really needs. And, you know, you got to give some credit to those guys in the bullpen, especially the other night in that 7-7 game when Mike Clevenger just didn't have it.
Yeah.
They came out and played very, very well. All of them pitched very, very well. But, you know, we have seen this situation play itself out throughout parts of the season where the bullpen has struggled at various points. Even Cody Allen, even Andrew Miller, who, you know, a lot of people seem to feel is still the Andrew Miller of the playoffs last year, you know, in that Dodgers series in particular, he had a couple bad outings, and that's going to happen. And the Indians use their relievers an awful lot. I mean, we saw that in the playoffs. Terry Francona loves to those guys, go to those guys in key situations. I mean, Brian Shaw has led the major leagues in innings, I think it's the last four seasons. So you know that he's pitching an awful, awful lot. You just kind of almost wonder, unfortunately, when that arm is going to finally, you know, catch up to him, when all that pitching is going to catch up to him. So I think you're right, Bob, when it comes to, you know, will this team make a major push for a lefty reliever? I think it's the number one priority that they need. I think utility guy would be second. I think, you know, again, starting pitching would certainly be third. I know there's other rumors out there, guys. Like, I know Jay Bruce is a guy that they've talked about, but I really don't know how he fits this team in particular, because Lonnie Chisenhall is going to come back, and you wonder, what are they going to do with a guy like Jay Bruce? He can't play five different positions. So the original thought, lefty reliever would be an awfully nice piece to add to this bullpen right now.
Matt Lodi joining us, talking about the American League Central and baseball in general. Just now, 3 days from the trading deadline. It'll be Monday at 4 o'clock. Jim Cushman, of course, alongside as well. Jimmy, go ahead.
You know, and thinking about some of the you mentioned starting pitcher would probably be third on the list. I wonder if it's not farther down, because the thing that I'm wondering about, they mentioned it all during the broadcast yesterday, that, hey, if Bauer, you know, has a clunker today, he might be the odd man out, because right now the Indians are going with a six-man rotation. Well, he mans up and has eight strong innings.
Right.
So if you're Tito, you're not going to stay with a six-man rotation forever, obviously. It's going to go back down to five. Who right now would be the odd man out? Are they still trying to obviously figure that one out?
Great point, Jim. And I think what you just said at the very last thing is correct. They're just trying to figure it out. And I mean, you know, I think if you look at the last round of starts, the guy who didn't pitch all that well is Mike Clevinger. But Clev had really pitched well before that. So it's hard for me to justify, oh, we're just going to, you know, dump him back into the bullpen. I mean, you know, it's a nice problem to have. You know, I mean, 2 weeks ago, there was all this talk about this team going out and looking at guys like obviously Sonny Gray and Vargas, and there were all these other pitchers that they were taking a look at. I don't know if they're really – that's not exactly the priority right now, but I will preface this. You know, Terry Francona has always been a proponent of saying, just when you think you have enough starting pitching, go get more. You know, so I'm not going to rule it out that they won't take a look at the trade market for starting pitching, but it is a nice problem to have six guys that can go right now as far as starting pitching is concerned. You know, the other big question mark, of course, is Danny Salazar. I know I mentioned it in the open. Listen, you know, national media jumping on Twitter, oh, the Indians got Salazar, they don't need to go worry about a starting pitcher. Let's push the brakes a little bit on that. It was one start. It was a very good start. Let's not just throw it away. But on the other hand, to sit there and say, oh, yeah, he's going to be just fine. He's going to be, you know, he's the old Danny Salazar. I want to see three, four starts before I get too excited about Danny Salazar being 100% and being the guy that they had before, you know, the All-Star game last year when he started to have all these, you know, kind of odd injuries, if you will, and just wasn't able to stay healthy. But, you know, right now, as I said, it's a good problem to have. But, you know, as I said, don't rule out the fact that they will at least look and continue to look at what the market's going to hold as far as starting pitchers is concerned. Could you imagine if this team found a way to make a deal for the likes of a Sonny Gray, how this rotation would look right now? I mean, you'd have Carrasco. Obviously, you'd have Kluber, number one, Carrasco, Sonny Gray. And then right now, you'd have Bauer, Salazar, Clevinger. I mean, it would be amazing to think, and you're not even talking Josh Tomlin. So you'd have an awful lot of options if you could add a big-name starting pitcher. But I think this team is very comfortable knowing that they've got a lot of pieces in the starting rotation. And as I mentioned to Bob earlier, this is kind of what we thought the rotation would look like. We thought this would be the strength of this team along with the bullpen, and it finally, over the course of this last homestand, has really started to step up.
Matt Lodi joining us, talking a little bit about the American League Central, the defending champion Indians. Obviously, the Tigers are in full sail mode. You think anybody is going to want to take on Justin Verlander, any of the contenders, whether it be the Dodgers, whether it be the Cubs?
Ooh.
Somebody going to want to take on,
yeah,
what's the old, I mean, 58 yeah, mil over the next 2 years, I believe it is, for a 34-year-old?
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money, Bob. And again, I Verlander, I know last time I was on the show with you, he was getting ready for a start against the Indians, and he has pitched pretty well against everybody but the Indians. And he actually pitched pretty well that start, that third time he finally got, finally had a good start against the Tribe. But, you know, money talks. And, you know, here's the thing that you got to look at in the American League. Obviously, you know, Houston, Boston, the Indians. I mean, I think those are arguably the best three teams. You know, the Yankees are still very much in the mix. Kansas City, you know, even though I don't think I think the Indians are going to win this division, Kansas City cannot be just ignored. you know, Verlander's a guy that, you know, again, he's very intriguing, but that price tag is going to scare a lot of people off, because you take on that type of salary, you're telling the teams around the majors that you're going for it. And I think if you do that, I think you've just got to be very, very careful, because number one, you're going to have to trade assets to get him. That's, you know, first and foremost. But then number two, you're really putting a lot of money in his pocket for a guy who, you know, has at times had some issues this year. But I think the Dodgers would be willing to take on that type of salary. Boy, I've heard Houston a couple of times, but I think, you know, they're in a position where they're still looking okay with the starting pitching. I don't think they would necessarily want to put that much money at one starter. I think they'd rather go after a Sonny Gray, a guy that they could justify having around for a couple more years, you know, like a Verlander, but would come at a much cheaper price.
Right. Fair enough. You mentioned Chisenhall coming back. When? And what about Kipnis as well?
Well, Chizzy's a little bit behind Kipnis from what we heard, and I believe it's this weekend Kip is supposed to go on a rehab. So we heard yesterday that Kipnis might be able to be back for this team in Boston. They go obviously to Chicago first, and then they go to Boston. I would have to say if I'm looking at it, you're probably going to see Chisenhall sometime around the next homestand. They come home a week from last night. They start a four-gamer on a kind of an odd Thursday deal. They started on a Thursday against the Yankees. And then they've got that two games against Colorado. They've got an off day sandwiched in between, which is good, before they go back on the road. So I would be willing to bet you're going to see Kipnis sometime in Boston, and then you're going to see Chisenhall probably sometime. If he doesn't play in that Yankee series, it's probably going to be after the off day on Monday. He'll play against Colorado on that Tuesday, and then they have a short turnaround on a Wednesday day game before they go back on the road.
How does Terry Francona work that out when Chisenhall is back? Who leaves the roster, the 25-man, for that? And then how does he divide the playing time up? Because you got some guys contributing. Almonte, of course, being sent back to Columbus,
yeah,
certainly helped out a little bit as far as the
back to Columbus, right?
Yeah, but you know, as far as the at bats and the playing time, what happens?
Well, you know, again, Abe is down in Columbus. He'll have to stay there for 10 days. I mean, the guy that obviously is the next odd man out for either Abe or for Chisenhall, or even for Kipnis, that matter, is Sean Armstrong. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been up and down more times than I can even count, and he keeps doing that because, obviously, he's a guy that, you know, they use, obviously, in emergency situations. He came up here after that long extra inning game in which Edwin hit the grand slam, because at that point, Dan Otero was going to pitch one more inning, and then they were going to have to go to Trevor Bauer, who would have, obviously that would have affected his start yesterday. But luckily enough, Edwin kind of ended that without having to worry about it and hit the grand slam and ended the game. So, you know, Armstrong is kind of the odd man out. I hate to say it, and I don't know if they're in this mode right now, but if Kipnis comes back, the other, obviously the guy that they probably could put back down to the minors is Eric Gonzalez. And again, another guy who is, you know, quietly been a pretty nice contributor this year. I think he's still hitting 300, but he's still the odd man out because, again, you've got Ramirez, you've got Kipnis. You know, your lineup and your starting rotation as far as the infield is kind of back to where it needs to be. As far as the outfield goes, I mean, again, once Chizzy comes back, he goes right back to playing. You know, they'll probably split platoon time between Austin Jackson, Brandon Guyer, you know, Guyer against lefties. Jackson's, you know, quietly also having a decent season when it comes to the amount of time he's had because he's been hurt. You know, he contributed the other night, contributed yesterday. I think you're going to see probably Chizzy get a majority of the playing time, and then those other guys, Guyer and Austin Jackson, and then if Abraham Almonte comes back up to the majors, those guys will all have to fight a little bit for some playing time because right now you can't sit Bradley Zimmer. I mean, he's playing lights out, and of course Michael Brantley, an all-star, and he's played very, very well and had a big homestand too. So you can't obviously sit either of those guys for any prolonged amount of time.
Matt Lodi, last thing, my friend, and thanks for your analysis of what's going on baseball-wise. Do you expect a busy weekend before the deadline on Monday at 4 o'clock? Jim and I were just kind of talking about there have been some moves made, you know, Quintana moving, and we consider and run down J.D. Martinez and some other guys that have that have been moved. But I don't know that there's been anything that would qualify as a blockbuster yet. I don't know maybe that there will be. But do you expect it to be a very busy weekend, or is the malaise, I think, maybe that we've seen over the last few days going to continue?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to have to do, you know, it seems to be a domino effect a lot of times with the trade deadline. You know, when one team makes a move, especially if it's a contending team like Boston, the Dodgers, the Astros, then other teams sort of react. And I know that the Indians have been very active in talking to teams. And again, I think if you look at the 1-2 punch of what they'd really like to get done by the end of the trade deadline on Monday, it would be a relief pitcher and it would be a utility player. But I just don't know, Bob, if you look, you know, there's an old saying, like when you look at baseball, a lot of these teams right now are overvaluing their players. You know that that's how the trade deadline always goes. And then come about 3:30 on Monday, suddenly things tend to start happening because teams realize that they're kind of overvaluing some of these guys. So, do I expect a guy like a Verlander, a Sonny Gray, a player of that caliber to be moved? I find it hard because, again, when it comes to trades and starting pitching, it always takes a ransom to get one of those types of players. And I think it really comes down to, is a team like the Cubs or Houston or the Dodgers, I guess, are they willing to part with, you know, what could potentially be a big time player in their future to get one of those players? I mean, we saw the Indians do it last year with Clint Frazier. He's having a good year with the Yankees, but the Indians still got obviously a great player in Andrew Miller out of that, and they still have Andrew Miller for another year and a half, so it wasn't like they just got a 3-month rental out of him. So, I think it's going to be more quiet than usual. I do think you're going to see some moves, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, move after move after move like it is, you know, like we've seen in years past, I guess, if you will, because a lot of these contending teams are actually not that far off. A lot of them are pretty well set. But again, would it surprise me to see a team like the Dodgers all of a sudden at 3:00 on Monday make a big move? Probably not, because that's in their makeup. But I think at the same time, I don't think it's going to be the, you know, move after move after move like we've seen in years past.
Matt Lodi joining us. Great insight and analysis as always. If you want more when he's not on the radio visiting with us, you can find him online at NEOSportsInsiders.com. Matt, always a good time. Thanks very much. And you know what? We'll talk sometime next week after the deadline. We'll see if the landscape has changed any in Major League Baseball. Sound good?
Thanks so much, Bob. Anytime, and you guys have a wonderful weekend.
You got it, my man. Thanks very much. Matt Lodi talking a little baseball with us. We got our final half hour of the extravaganza of the week coming up after I tell you about the Michigan International Speedway Contest. If you want to go to the races on August 11th at MIS, up for grabs in this tremendous opportunity, tickets to Friday qualifying, tickets to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series on Saturday, and tickets to Pure Michigan 400 on Sunday. If you are the winner, qualify by texting Miss Ticket. It's MIS for Michigan International Speedway, but it's all one word, Miss Ticket, MIS Ticket, one word, to 64636. 64636. Good luck from Michigan International Speedway and Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We've got a lot more to do in this last half hour. Trust me, you're going to want to be around. I'm going to play for you the Ric Flair Long Drive Champion, and you'll have to, if you were listening before, you know what I mean. If you weren't, well, keep listening. You will as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Rolling onward, are we? 4:42. We got 18 minutes of outstanding awesome left on the extravaganza. Then some awesome from Mr. Cushlin, who is in for Mr. Miller on drive time coming right up. Hey, before we go to the phones, and we're going to talk to our man Jimmy, who's always a great call. I got to play this, Cush. I don't know. How did we come up? How did it come up anyway? Oh, Ric Flair. I was so excited about the Kaepernick story. That's what it was. I had the Kaepernick story, and we were playing sound bites that made me happy.
One of them was the classic Ric Flair
indeed
one.
Indeed it was. Yes,
that's
indeed.
The one.
I use that all the time. In fact, I got a whole bunch of good dead notes.
Because the Ninja Boy is going to style and profile, and you're going to bleed all night long. Woo!
Anyway, he perhaps is best known for styling and profiling and Rolex wearing and jet flying and kiss stealing and all the fun stuff. Well, the Long Drive Championships were held this past week. At least it was on TV. I don't know, maybe it was on tape delay or when it was. But the Long Drive Competition was, and it's basically the home run derby of golf,
right.
Is what it is. They just have guys getting up there and ripping, just letting fly with everything they got. Grip it and rip it, as it were. And this was at the Mile High Showdown, is what it's called. And Maurice Allen was the eventual champion. In the quarterfinal round, he hit a bomb 400, I think I said 500 before I was mistaken, 483 yards. Now, I want you to think about that. I want you to stand at the end of a football field and look all the way down at the other goal line. Then I want you to picture beyond that another football field and look down at that far goal line from where you stand. Then picture another football field, and then another one, and then 83 yards of another one, all from where you stand. Are you kidding me? 483 3 yards. Just insane. Well, anyway, dude, he's built like a pro wrestler too, is Maurice Allen. So after he won his championship, by the way, that was like his quarterfinal drive, his game-winning drive, or his championship-winning drive, a meager like 436, almost 50 yards shorter, coward, weakling. But Maurice Allen had some fun doing an interview with NBC and their golf coverage, an interview that would have done Ric Flair proud, standing inside the squared circle or just off the side on the set. Talking to Mean Gene Okerlund. Here we go.
How's it feel to be moving on?
Man, somebody asked me before how I feel, so I guess the best thing I can tell you is you're talking to the Rolex-wearing, diamond ring-wearing, kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, jet limousine-riding, jet-flying son of a gun, and I got the hardest time holding these alligators down. Now give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Oh, that's outstanding.
You talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, jet limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun. And I got the hardest time holding these alligators down. Now give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
And with that, he stormed off of the set. That was all he needed to say. And I got to ask, love it. A little bit high pitched on his woo. Got to work on that a little bit, but that was just epic. Oh, did I tell you to enjoy that, Kush?
Oh, that is outstanding.
That's
stuff.
One of the most
I
fun things
that
I've heard in a long time, seriously.
That is good.
All right, let's go to Jimmy, who's in Toledo. Jimmy is always a fun guy to chat with. He's always got interesting takes on what we're talking about. Jimmy, what's going on, brother? How are you? Happy Friday.
Hey, what's up, brother? Listen, I want to get a Colin Kaepernick, but first I want to, like, I think you're being a little too hard on the Kansas City fandom, that Olsen kid. You know, considering that he's playing basically in Kansas City, you know, their Diggs is probably the Kansas City Boys Club gymnasium. So, you know, 100 yards a game is probably pretty good, you know. And I think the Ravens, they might have broken down. Maybe they were impressed with his tape against, Arkansas Aardvarks or the Amarillo Apes. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe they're impressed
well,
with
hold on,
his,
hold on,
his gymnasium generalship is a he maybe manages the game well. I don't know.
Let me, you know, it's funny, whatever you said, Amarillo's. Let me see if I can look at all the team names here. Just real quick to let people know who's in the Champions League. Jim, do you have the standings maybe so that I could pull
hang
up
on,
all
I
of
close that page. I got to open it back up.
All right, maybe, hold on. I think I got it. Here we go. I got
Park,
it. We
man,
got the Amarillo Venom, the Bloomington Edge. Isn't that a car? The Dallas Marshals. The Duke City Gladiators. I don't know where Duke City is. I don't even know what state it's in. Omaha Beef. It's just beef. We're beef. We're not steers. You know, we're not Texas Longhorns. We're beef, which is what happens after you're slaughtered and you pick it up on your grocer's or your butcher's at your counter. The Salina Liberty. Sounds like a women's basketball team. Sioux City Bandits. Texas Revolution. Those aren't bad. Wichita Force. The Centex Cavalry, the Kansas City Phantoms, as mentioned, the West Michigan Ironmen, and finally the Bismarck Bucks. Those are your Champions Indoor League teams from which David Olson, is it David or Brian? What was this dude's name? Olson has been signed by the Baltimore Ravens to be one of their backup quarterbacks instead of Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, it's David.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, it's David?
Yeah, it is David.
Yeah, he's such a household name, Jimmy. I mean, I could remember that 30 minutes after hearing about it.
So there weren't any aardvarks in that league? Then, you know, he's not hit rock bottom yet.
No aardvarks. No aardvarks.
Well, listen, Colin Kaepernick, right? Let's see. I agree with you wholeheartedly. He's probably good enough to play in the league as a backup. But he did it to himself, obviously. And nobody's going to take him because basically, he cost the NFL a whole lot of money, and I know everybody can say he didn't, but the fact of the matter is they've taken all kinds of surveys, and the league had to shell out a bunch of commercials free of charge, you know, to make up for the advertising rates they charged. And every time they've actually done a study on it, or, you know, legitimate things, you know, where you don't have the progressive hacks in the sports media trying to, you know, apologists,
right,
you know, for him. It's generally the, you know, the angry guy out there, you know, who I'm talking about, like me. that basically said, yeah, we're not watching because we don't want to see this spoiled jerk basically, you know, lifts his leg on the flag and tells everybody to go to hell after he made a great living. And the thing that gets me about him is he grew up in, what, Nevada to an adopted white family. I think his mother's birth mother's white. I mean, this guy, what's he trying to do? Is this all about getting his street cred or something? I don't know.
Yes,
but putting
honesty,
him in Baltimore in that situation in Baltimore right now, we had the Freddie Gray thing and all the riots over there, I think that would be fun just for, like, we might have some CNN moments. It might be fun to drop him in there and, you know, see what we might get for some real dramatics.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. It would be kind of fun. I thought the perfect place would have been for him would have been Seattle, progressive Seattle, you know, and you know, they were welcoming. In fact, one of the city council members wrote a letter, put it in the paper there, the Seattle, whatever it is, Times or something, and wrote a letter saying to the team ownership and to Pete Carroll, please, you should do this. It's the right thing to do because of ABCD. I mean, they're just so progressive, and they so want to embrace this guy and his cops are pigs attitude. I thought it would be perfect, but you heard what Pete Carroll said. Pete Carroll said he's a starting caliber quarterback in this league. That's not somebody that should be our backup. Meaning, what if Russell has a bad game or two? Will the fans start clamoring for
somebody
else?
Well, it's not even the fans. I mean, listen, we all know that basically Russell Wilson is from all reports, I mean, he's chased, and he's like the complete total opposite.
Yes, he's
conservative, buttoned down, and that, you know how easy those locker rooms divide. And when you got characters like Richard Sherman and a lot of outspoken dudes in that locker room, they'd easily line up behind Colin Kaepernick. You know, because they've already had problems.
That's a really, really great point.
So they wouldn't want to bring him in there because he, you know, look, he might have had
There's
something
There's already a divide in that locker room, Jimmy, which I'm sure you know from your comments here. There are a lot of black players for the Seattle Seahawks who are not necessarily fans of or friends with Russell Wilson because they don't feel like he's, you know,
he's not black enough. Let's just put it that way.
That's what they do. And, you know, he's got the, I think he's got a white girlfriend and or wife. I mean, and I mean, I don't know.
He's with Sierra.
Oh yeah,
you know?
That's right. But he is, but like you said, that button down, not kind of the street type of thing or whatever. And you got Michael Bennett and people like that, and Sherman and others and Baldwin who are really outspoken social activist guys. I could totally see them really becoming fast friends with Kaepernick and making things real uncomfortable for your franchise quarterback.
That would have been a disaster for that franchise. But, you know, they're professional enough to where they understand that Russell Wilson's, you know, he's arguably been next to Brady. You know, he's on a hell of a pace. I mean, really, one bonehead call from Pete Carroll, and he's got two Super Bowl rings, and Tom Brady has one left. So
yeah,
you know,
there's no doubt about it. He's had a really great career. I will say though, personally, I'm not as big of a fan of his talent as I am of a lot of other guys around his age. I think he's in, like some guys do, fall into the perfect situation. They're drafted by the right team at the right time. And
yeah, but
I don't
something.
Know. Hold on. Let me finish the thought. When I watch Russell Wilson play, I see a guy who needs exactly what he had, and that is one of the league's best defenses, giving him many possessions, and one of the league's best running games in Marshawn Lynch that allowed his skills to be maximized. I don't think he's a guy that if you put him on a pass-first team without a great running game and a great defense where you've got to expect Drew Brees out of him, that sort of thing, I don't think he can deliver that, but he is in the perfect situation to be the best quarterback that he can be.
See, actually, I don't actually agree with you, because I actually one of the few people that remembered him at North Carolina State and kind of like, well, where the hell did he go? And then I found out he played baseball, and then when he came back to play for Wisconsin in that fifth year, I was like, oh, yeah, they've got some. I just think he's just a winner. I mean, and he kind of showed a year ago when they got in that shootout with the Steelers when he kind of put them on his back, and he was passing the ball and throwing it all around the yard. And the guy for his size has a hell of an arm, and he throws a beautiful deep ball. He throws about as good a deep ball as anybody in that league. Don't get a lot of credit for it because he doesn't have the, you know, the prototypical wide receiver.
You're right. He doesn't, so. and I'm part of that. I'm not giving him a ton of credit for that either. And I guess, you know, time will tell. I mean, Marshawn Lynch is coming back, but it's for the Raiders now, and we'll see what, you know, it'll be a second year without Marshawn Lynch now coming up here, and we'll see what his numbers dropped without Marshawn, you know, from 34 TDs and 8 picks in 2015 with Lynch and going to the Super Bowl. Last year was 21-11. Quarterback rating went from 110 down to 92. Some things there that kind of bolster what I think.
Yeah, but 110 to 92, so he was only really good instead of exceptionally good. And the fact is, A lot of guys. And he's been good at.
Hold on. 110 down to 100 would be going from exceptional to really good. Down to 92. 100 is my benchmark. When you get there, okay, that's when you're an elite passer. And there's about five, six guys like that who are 100 or higher most years. When you're down at 92, you're in that next tier. And that's where I see him, is in that next tier, not in that top tier of Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, Roethlisberger, you know, and you can go through the rest of them.
If you remember, though, he lost Marshawn, then Rawls was good for a minute, and then he got hurt. Jimmy Graham got hurt, and he didn't exactly fit them. And you can't name one. I mean, well, okay, you can name a couple receivers on his team, but, I mean, he was. They just put a whole lot on him, and after a while, the league figures you out. So I think if they get healthy, he comes back.
Well, you just nailed it, Jimmy. You just nailed it for me. After a while, the league figures you out, but it hasn't figured out Drew Brees. It hasn't figured out Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, sure it has. Sure it has.
Guys that we're talking about here.
Drew Brees, I've never been I love Drew Brees. I watched him at Purdue, and he's great. But I take Russell Wilson over Drew Brees myself.
Oh, not me. Not if I needed to win a game. Not if I needed the quarterback to win the game for me. I would not. I would go with Drew Brees.
He's already been to more Super Bowl. But here's the thing.
Understood. But put Drew Brees in Seattle with the same defense and the same running game to add to his passing skills, and I think you see something far, far better up there. I really
Russell
agree.
Wilson won in North Carolina State. He won in Wisconsin. He's won at Seattle. And
I'm
he,
not saying he's
and,
a
know,
scrub.
He
I'm
wins
he's
everywhere.
The
next he went.
Down. He's in the but, Matt Stafford tier for me. Not in the.
There we go. We agree with a lot of stuff, but then you say something like that, and I could go on for hours. But Matt Stafford,
I know you
he's
can't
a good
go on for hours because I'm out of time,
guy,
but
man.
Thanks,
but come on, dog.
Hey, thanks Matt, for the call. No, that next tier down, underneath, underneath. Thanks for the call, buddy. Underneath, you know, the Rodgers, Brady, Luck when he is right and healthy and not, you know, playing behind Swiss cheese on his line, all that stuff. Blah blah blah. Matt Ryan, the MVP. Right, the Roethlisberger I put there. Right below that tier is that next group. Probably Derek Carr bursting into that top tier this year. You know, and you get down into some of those names. Phillip Rivers is there. Well, Breeze is in that top tier, too. I find Russell Wilson right there just in the top 10, but just outside of the top 6 tier that I'm looking at. But that can be a discussion for another day because we are just about out of time. Hey, a reminder, though. By the way, don't forget the contest. We've got an amazing opportunity for you at our website, 1065theticket.com, to register for a $1,000 gift certificate from American Airlines. Good toward 2 round-trip tickets departing from Toledo Express via Charlotte, North Carolina, then anywhere in the continental U.S. from Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, the American Airlines, and Toledo's ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Just register at 1065theticket.com. Now, having said that, I'll say this. Jim Cushley is in for Mike Miller. Drive Time is next right here on The Ticket. We'll see you Monday.